And joining us by telephone from Toronto right now, we have Dana Fountain and Peter Gorman. And these two young men were part of the Mountains to Montreal expedition in 2011, which happened to stop right here at our station, WTIP, en route as they crossed the Quetico. Mountains to Montreal crossed across Canada, started in Jasper, Alberta, and ended up in Montreal. Dana Fountain and Peter Gorman, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Hello. Pleasure to be here.
And we have you both on the phone, both on separate extensions over there in Toronto.
That's right.
Well, as I mentioned, it's nice to have you aboard. It was great to have you stop in at our station. And what a detour you made from coming down from the Quetico to come into Grand Marais. How did you pull that off?
Well, I guess as we were paddling through Quetico, we were sort of desperate for whatever little bits of civilization we could get. And we were able to tune into this radio station that started to pique our interest just at the time that you were starting your fundraising drive. And so we started having these wild ideas of finding some way of getting down there and managed to, somehow get a boat and a car and eventually, made it to Grand Marais.
Pretty resourceful.
Yeah.
And also to take a detour, we are so impressed that you take a detour from your trip, which, you know, quite often it's pretty easy to focus in on the direction you're heading.
Well, we were in Quetico for a long period of time, and that meant that from Fort Francis to Thunder Bay, we were pretty much in the bush the whole time, and we were there for about 3 to 4 weeks. 28 days, I think, actually, in total, we were between the two cities. And we didn't get many radio reception out there, and we couldn't even hear CBC. All we could pick up was WTIP. And to do this, we had to hook up lines into trees and attach it to any mital objects, typically our saw, to try to find the signal. And once we got it, we loved it. And so, you know, it was well worth the detour.
Well, that's just great. I'd like to know, get an idea, this Mountains to Montreal expedition. Now, where was that born, and in whose mind, and how did you guys get together?
I think I mostly blame Dana for that, actually.
Okay.
You can probably explain better.
Well, we had previously had done a trip in 2006, and we went into fall, and this was our experience fall trip, as we called it. And we went in September and planned to finish in November, and well, by the end of October, north of Lake Superior up in Ontario, we eventually got snowed out and iced out, and we started joking that, you know, maybe next time it would be wiser to go into summer instead of into winter. And we started that as a joke, and we started joking, well, if we're going to be doing it, why don't we do a cross-country canoe trip? And, well, once you joke about something for long enough, it becomes reality, and we started seriously planning it, about 3 years ago, picking out the route, picking out the details, and it wasn't that hard to choose a route because the route that we chose was pretty much the historical highway that used to connect Canada and played a pivotal role in the fur trade. And so planning it wasn't that bad from a route perspective, but getting people on board and getting sponsorship, that all took a lot of time and effort. But in the end, we assembled a team of three Canadian guys who were all under 30, and an odd man by the name of Pascal, who was a French-American national, and he lives in Paris, and he retired from his job and joined us. So he was the fourth member of the crew.
Now, was he aware that he was odd? Now, how did you mentioned that all three of you are under 30. It's difficult. You were gone from like May 1st to, what was it, sometime?
September 11th.
September 11th. It's hard to find that much time in a person's life to get away from jobs and other responsibilities.
Well, the good thing is the economy is bad.
We don't have jobs to get away from.
Okay.
It's not that hard for us, really.
So
Peter and I were lucky. We just finished our master's just before departing, and another member of our group does contract work in the summer, so he was able to take the time off. And of course, Pascal had planned to retire in anticipation of doing this trip, so it gave him real good incentive to drop everything in Paris and come on over.
Now, Pascal, he wasn't under 30.
No, he actually celebrated his 60th birthday in a field outside of Edmonton on the trip.
Wow, so it was kind of a, almost like, you could almost call this an intergenerational trip.
It was, and there was learning to be had on both ends. We learned from him, but he also learned a lot from us, and it was a good cultural, cross-cultural, and intergenerational experience.
Now, this whole trip was 4,500 kilometers, and here now most people would be more familiar with 2,700 miles, about. Took you 134 days. That's a lot of paddling.
Yeah.
How did, what kind of physical problems or snafus did you run into? Anybody get hurt or, you know, you have to take some extended stops, layovers?
Remarkably not in terms of anybody getting seriously hurt. We were definitely had our moments along the way when we were a little more sore than others, and we had times where we'd take a couple days off here and there, but we were sort of lucky that the way the trip goes, the way the route goes, the first month or so is all downstream, so we were able to sort of ease our ways into it.
Okay. Anyway. Now, is it true that I looked at the route on a big map, but of course not in, in the little details. Is there any long stretches along that route where you kind of run out of water and you got to figure out something else to do?
Our biggest portage was the Grand Portage, and other than that, it's a remarkably interconnected route that we did, and we were never, I think our other biggest portage that we had to do was maybe 3 kilometers or so. I think that's about 2 miles. Most of the time, we were hop, skip, and a jump away from water. Even the height of land that divides the Nelson Watershed, which is the water that goes and flows all the way to Hudson's Bay, and the Atlantic Watershed, which is where the Great Lakes are, that portage between the two massive watersheds was only about 400 meters. So it was an exceptionally eye-opening event to realize that, you know, wow, this is truly a land of lakes and rivers, and it's all interconnected. And in essence, I believe that Canada, if you're going to choose a way to cross it via canoe, is the way to go.
That's amazing that you can cover that many miles and have those short little hops between water. It's just pretty incredible.
I know, and talking about it as being short little hops is probably
generous, I think.
I mean, this is a country that has many kilometers that does not, you know, to cover the distance. There's many kilometers, and those do not come easy. You really have to work hard for them. We had a stretch of probably about 700 kilometers going upstream, and, well, those days do not, they don't stand out in my memory as being very good days. Uh-huh. Those were the days you just put your head down and go slowly every paddle by paddle, day by day, hour by hour. Oh.
And even short portages, I mean, we're still lugging a 240-pound canoe on our heads, so that adds up quickly in terms of how it wears on you.
That is something we should talk about a little bit, is the canoe that you were in is different than what most of us would be grabbing. You know, now you can get the Kevlar or other types of canoes that are 38 pounds or 35 pounds, but you chose... It appeared 1 22-foot canoe.
Yep, we went the traditional way, in essence, because this was a kind of a canoe like the Canoe du Nord, which were the traveling canoes that were used beyond the Grand Portage up into the land west of Superior. These canoes typically were about 22 feet, 24 feet, and could carry a large cargo. We chose this canoe for a couple of reasons. One, it was great to have everybody in the same boat at the same time. It was like a party boat. You know, you were able to have one person make sandwiches at lunch hour and pass them forward and never have to stop. You could have a person kind of curl up and have a nap if they needed, and everybody else could be paddling, and you could all be moving. And there was that sense of momentum that you're all in it in one big boat together, which was great for camaraderie. Of course, once we started portaging it, then we realized the price that we've paid for it, because it typically, if we had to put it on our head and carry it, it took five of us to do it with two people in the bow and stern switching out every about 200 yards or so in order to alleviate that kind of crushing continual weight. And, you know, we loved our canoe, and we affectionately named it the Beluga, but it was still a walrus on land. It did not move well. It was certainly a weight to be carried.
Now, with one canoe, and you got four guys in there, Can you carry, apparently you could, carry enough stuff to keep you going between all the equipment you need and all the food? And you mentioned that you were, you know, in the Quetico for like 3-4 weeks without resupply, it sounds like.
Well, we brought probably more stuff than we needed, and we ran into a number of other canoe trips that were doing a similar kind of cross-country expeditions, and of course, we totally beat them in the category of useless things. We brought a ukulele, a guitar, 17 pounds of cast iron, pots to cook our meals in, and for us, I think, you know, doing the cross-country trip for us was very much about experiencing the journey. And if you took a bit of extra stuff, including a lot of audiovisual equipment and a lot of extra, you know, stuff that perhaps other trips would overlook, you get a sense that, you know what, we're here for a good time, not to beat the clock.
Now, were you aware that there are lighter pots and pans than cast iron?
Oh, yes. But okay. The good thing is that if you cook on a fire every day, you get variable flame, you know, kind of temperature. And if a cast iron is a beautiful piece of cookery to have out in the bush, because it actually insulates it really well. And a lot of our really good meals were just pouring in some butter and frying up potatoes or something like that. You know, it's just simple stuff, but you didn't have to worry about them sticking to the bottom.
Now, you mentioned the odd man in your expedition, Pascal. Where did you run into him, and what were you doing at the time?
I met him in 2006, in 2007, actually, in North Africa, in Morocco, in a town called Marrakesh. And I had just come back from crossing the Sahara with a friend of mine. And I hung out with him for about 2 days in Marrakesh, and we chatted and shared stories. And he was interested, of course, in what we do in Canada for what you know, adventures and what have you not. And I explained that, you know, we go for canoe trips, and we cover short distances, maybe a week-long trip and stuff like that. And didn't think much of it. And a couple years later, I was traveling through Paris, and I decided to give him a shout and say, hey, do you want to meet? And have breakfast. And he invited me up to his apartment, and we had a nice breakfast. And he said, well, what are you doing in your life? And I said, I've got a plan. You know, I'm going to go to school for a bit, and then I'm going to do a canoe trip in 2011. And he was intrigued. And I showed him in a book, in an atlas, the route that we plan to take. And he said, I'm going to do it. And, he didn't show any hesitation. He went right at it and started the planning process and was helping out with getting sponsors. And he did it. And, you know, I got to hand it to him. You know, I was a bit skeptical when you meet somebody who, you know, is 57 years old and has a life in Paris, a job, a wife, and a family, and a country house. And, you know, all those things that one would often think ties you down. But he's willing to drop it all and have an adventure.
Pretty amazing, and especially on somebody that you just kind of met.
Yeah, absolutely.
Somebody, yeah, it sounds like you guys have a pretty adventurous life. Crossing the Sahara is not something that the average guy thinks about doing.
No, and gradually, I'm trying to work out all my kind of my desire to travel out when we're early. And the problem is, though, as I said before, you start joking about things. And one of the jokes that we started talking about from this trip is that in 2016, we're going to try to do the Mackenzie. Maybe my adventure days aren't over.
Well, you know, I was going to ask you what was next, and it sounds like you're way ahead of the game. You already got something in mind.
I just have to convince Peter.
Yeah, I'm not in on that joke yet.
Well, he's not. Well, he could end up being the odd guy and join in anyway then, it sounds like. Say, you know, you spent a lot of time together, obviously 100 and some odd days on paddling, and I'm sure that you had a lot of stories to tell each other and a lot of stories to tell everybody. Have you got one of your favorite stories about this trip you could share with our listeners?
Peter, do you want to share a story?
Oh, goodness.
I kind of caught you unaware with that one, didn't I?
Yeah, well, I mean, there are just too many to mention.
Okay.
One of the great stories we have is we met a guy from Minnesota named Mark, and he paddled with us for a couple of days, and we shared some meals with him, and we met him in the boundary region. And he helped us out along the way, because when we got to Grand Portage, he met us in his car and offered to move the gear that we had, and all we had to do was move the canoe. So it turned out that we had the 20-kilometer portage through Grand Rapids only with canoes, which was great. It saved us a lot of energy. And on top of it, when he met us, he had cold beer and bacon.
That's a good guy, wasn't he?
So he was automatically our savior. But the really interesting thing is that when we got to Grand Portage, we convinced him to hop in our boat because we could fit five. He paddled with us until we got to the U.S. border. And, of course, he didn't have his passport with us, so we had to drop him off. And he decided that he was going to hitchhike out and walk across the peninsula that we dropped him off at. And it took him eventually 3 hours to get home because no one picked him up on the highway, which is too bad. Hmm. But he, in the end, traveled all the way down from St. Paul and met us in Montreal. And, you know, that type of support and encouragement really is outstanding. I mean, it's amazing to have someone so moved by this trip to be able to say, you know what, I want to be there when you cross that finish line. And it really meant a lot.
Yeah, that's great. That's great to meet people like that. We've been speaking with Dana Fountain and Peter Gorman, two members of the Mountains to Montreal expedition, the 2011 expedition. I believe that folks can look at your website to learn more about your trip. What is it, your website?
It's www.mountainstomontreal.ca, and it's the number 2, Mountains to Montreal.
Mountains to Montreal. I think I misspoke here a minute ago. But at any rate, it's certainly well worth the look. We want to thank you guys so much, not only for coming down to visit us, but also now for sharing it with our listeners, your latest trip here in last year. And we hope that you'll be in contact with us when the next one rolls around.
Oh, thank you. We gained a very real affection for your radio station on our trip. So we've got some great programming on there. Anyway.
Thank you. That's Dana Fountain and Peter Gorman. Thanks a lot, guys.